Where were you, Joe?
A smoking, Pip. I do assure you, at the Bargeman. When I was there, she was a-standing at the door here. Said good night to Longman the Ditcher. He says that, Pip. I mean to say, Pip, I got home before 10. Fire was a-going, but the candle was snuffed. Atween the door and her. And nothing took, Pip. She were hit with this, Pip. On her back and head when she was looking at the fire. It's a convict's leg iron. You know what's particular, Pip?
No.
That's been filed asunder some time ago. That should not happen to a woman, Pip. Never.
Later, Joe's opinion was agreed with. The leg iron hadn't been worn by either of the two convicts who had escaped that night. I believed it to be my convict's iron, but my mind did not accuse him of having put it to its latest use. I believed only Orlick, or the stranger who had shown me the file, could have become possessed of it. But Orlick had been seen about all that evening in town. There was nothing against him but the quarrel, and my sister had quarrelled with him and everybody else about her 10,000 times. As to the stranger, if he had returned for his banknotes, there would have been no dispute. My sister was fully prepared to give them back. And I could never admit to Joe I had provided the weapon, however innocently. I still believed the truth would alienate him from me. For a long time, my sister lay very ill in bed. Her sight was disturbed so that she saw objects multiplied and reached out at visionary teacups and wine glasses. Her hearing, too, was greatly impaired, and her memory and her speech became unintelligible. When at last she could be moved downstairs, it was still necessary to keep my slate by her, that she might indicate in writing what she couldn't speak. Handwriting apart, as she was a bad speller and Joe a hopeless reader, extraordinary complications arose. Mutton was administered instead of medicine, and the baker for bacon was one of our mildest mistakes. However, her temper was greatly improved, and she was patient. But at intervals of 2 to 3 months, she would often put her hands to her head and remain for a week in some gloomy forgetfulness. We were at a loss to find a suitable attendant for her, until Biddy appeared one day. The whole of her worldly effects in a small speckled box, a total blessing to the whole household. Biddy's first triumph in her new office was to solve something that had baffled all of us. Again and again, my sister had traced on the slate a character that looked like a capital T.
Something starting with a T?
Tar?
Toast? Teapot?
Tub, Mrs. Joe?
It don't have to be a letter, Mr. Gargery. She could be drawing something.
Oi.
A hammer? Have you drawn a hammer?
I'll go and get all mine.
But it was to no avail. Then we thought of crutches, the shape being much the same. But she shook her head so violently we were terrified lest in her shattered state she'd dislocate her neck. Then...
Mr. Gargery, it is a hammer. She's lost his name. She can only signify by his hammer. It's him, Orlick.
Me? For what? Come in the kitchen.
Leave off, master.
We expected her to denounce him, but no. She seemed anxious to be on good terms with him. She was humble, like a child wishing to please their master. From that moment, a day rarely passed without her drawing the hammer on the slate and without Orlick slouching in and standing doggedly before her, as if he knew no more than I did what to make of it. My every birthday I visited Miss Havisham and received a guinea, no interview lasting but a few minutes. Time had stopped in the mysterious place while I and everything else moved on. But as I grew older, still under its influence, I continued at heart to hate my trade and to be ashamed of home. Imperceptibly, I became aware of Biddy. Her hair grew bright and neat, and her hands were always clean. She was not beautiful. She was common, and couldn't be like Estella. But one evening, looking up from my book, I caught her watching me over her needlework and thought her eyes curiously attentive, pretty, and very good.
Biddy, how do you manage it? Either I'm very stupid or you're very clever.
What is it that I manage?
To learn everything that I do and always keep up with me.
Oh.
I might as well ask how you manage.
No, because when I come in from the forge of a night, anyone can see me turn into at it, but you never.
I suppose I must catch it, like a car.
She was an extraordinary girl. She knew the different terms of our trade, the sorts of work, the tools. In short, whatever I knew, Biddy knew.
You're one of those, Biddy, who make the most of every chance. Nothing was on your side before you came here, and see how improved you are. Biddy? Why are you crying?
I'm not. What put that in your head?
Biddy? You were my first teacher. Then we never thought of ever being together like this in this kitchen.
No. Poor Mrs. Joe.
I don't mean that. We must talk together more. Like we used to. And I must consult you more. Let's walk on the marshes. Next Sunday, Joe will tend to Mrs. Joe.
Under lovely summer weather, we passed the village and the church and the churchyard and sauntered out onto the marshes.
Biddy, I want to be a gentleman.
Oh, I wouldn't if I was you. I don't think it would answer.
I have particular reasons for wanting to be.
You know best, Pip. But don't you think you're happier as you are?
I'm not. I'm disgusted with my calling and with my life. I've never taken to either since I was bound. Don't be absurd.
Was I being? I'm sorry for that. I didn't mean to be. I only want you to do well and be comfortable.
Then understand, once and for all, I never shall or can be anything but miserable unless I can lead a very different sort of life from what I lead now.
That's a pity.
Yes, you're right. I know it's much to be regretted, but I can't help it. If I could be half as fond of the forge as I was when I was little, you and I and Joe would want for nothing, and Joe and I would perhaps become partners when I'm out of my time. And I might have even grown up to keep company with you. Sit with you on this very bank on a fine Sunday. Quite different people. And I'd have been good enough for you, wouldn't I, Biddy?
Yes, I'm not over particular.
Instead of that, see how I'm going on. What would it signify to me being coarse and common if nobody had told me so?
It was not a very true nor a very polite thing to say. Who said it?
The beautiful young lady at Miss Havisham's. And she's more beautiful than anybody ever was. And I admire her dreadfully.
Do you want to be a gentleman to spite her or gain her over?
I don't know.
Because if it's to spite her, then don't listen to her words. And if it's to gain her over, I should think, but you know best, she's not worth gaining over.
It may be all quite true, but I can't forget her.
Oh, come here, Pip. I'm glad of one thing, and that is you felt you could give me your confidence, and you know you may depend on my keeping it and always so far deserving it. If your first teacher, and she's so much in need of being taught herself, had been your teacher at the present time, she thinks she knows what lesson she would set. But it would be a hard one to learn. And you've got beyond her, and it's no use now. Shall we walk a little further, or go home?
Biddy. I shall always tell you everything.
Till you're a gentleman.
You know I never shall be, so that's always. Let's walk further. Oh, Biddy, I wish you could put me right.
I wish I could.
If I could only get myself to fall in love with you. You don't mind my speaking so openly, do you?
Oh, dear, not at all. Don't mind me.
If I could only get myself to do it, that would be the thing for me.
But you never will, you see.
Hello? Where are you two going?
Where should we be going but home?
Well, then, I'm jiggered if I don't see you back.
Don't let him come. I don't like him. Hurry.
We thank you, Orlick, but we don't want seeing home.
But he came slouching after us at a little distance.
Why don't you like him?
Because I'm afraid he likes me.
Did he ever tell you?
No, but he dances at me whenever he can catch my eye. But it makes no difference to you, you know.
But I don't like it. I don't approve.
Nor I neither. Though that makes no difference to you.
But I must tell you, I should have no opinion of you, Biddy, if he danced at you with your consent.
I kept an eye on Orlick from then on, and whenever circumstances were favourable to him dancing at Biddy, I got between him and her. At times it was clear that Biddy was immeasurably better than Estella, and that the plain, honest working life to which I was born had nothing in it to be ashamed of. Then, like a destructive missile, remembrance of the Havisham days would fall upon me and scatter my wits again, but never so momentously as it did one Saturday night in the fourth year of my being bound.
Wayne, let you drink up and then we'd better go.
From information I have received, I have reason to believe there is a blacksmith among you, by name Joseph or Joe Gargery. Which is the man?
Here is the man.
The stranger was dark and burly, with strong black dots where his beard and whiskers would have been if he had let them frame his face. His left hand always in his pocket, he bit the forefinger of the other from time to time, and his hands smelled of scented soap.
You have an apprentice, commonly known as Pip. Is he here?
I am here.
I wish to have a private conference with you two. It will take a little time. Perhaps we'd better go to your place of residence. My name is Jaggers, and I'm a lawyer in London. I'm pretty well known. I have unusual business to transact with you, and I commence by explaining that it is not of my originating. If my advice had been asked, I should not be here. It was not. And here I am. What I have to do as the confidential agent of another, I do no less and no more. Joseph Gargery, I am the bearer of an offer to relieve you of this young fellow, your apprentice. You would not object to cancel his indentures at his request and for his good? And you would want nothing for so doing?
Lord forbid that I should want anything for not standing in Pip's way.
Lord forbidding is pious, but not to the purpose. The question is, would you want anything? Do you want anything?
The answer is no.
Very well. Recollect the admission you've made and don't try to go from it presently.
Who's it gonna try?
You keep a dog.
I do.
Remember, Brag is a good dog, but Holdfast is a better. Now, I return to this young fellow, and the communication I have to make is that he has great expectations.
What?
Joe.
He will come into a handsome property, and further, it is the desire of the present possessor of that property that he should be immediately removed from his present sphere of life and from this place and be brought up as a gentleman.
My dream was out. My wild fancy surpassed by sober reality. Miss Havisham was going to make my future on a grand scale.
First, you must always bear the name Pip. You have no objection, I dare say.
No.
Second, the name of the person who is your liberal benefactor remains a profound secret until that person chooses to reveal it, and you must never make any inquiry. If you have a suspicion, keep that suspicion in your breast. But if you have any objection to it, this is the time to speak.
I have no objections.
I should think not. We next come to mere details of arrangement. Although I've used the word expectations, you must know that you are not endowed with expectations only. There is lodged already in my hands a sum of money amply sufficient for your suitable education and maintenance. You will please consider me your guardian. I tell you at once, I'm paid for my services, or I shouldn't render them. Am I answered that you're ready to be placed at once under some proper tutor?
Yes.
Yeah. Your inclinations are to be considered. I don't think that wise mind, but it's my trust. Have you ever heard of any tutor whom you would prefer to another?
No, sir.
Well, there is one of whom I have some knowledge. I don't recommend him, observe, because I never recommend anybody. The gentleman I speak of is one Mr. Matthew Pocket.
Matthew Pocket?
Matthew Pocket will come and see me at last when I am on this table. His place will be at my head.
Miss Havisham's relation.
You've heard the name. The question is, what do you say to it?
I'm much obliged to you for your mention of Mr. Matthew Pocket, and I would gladly try that gentleman.
Good. Well, you'd better try him in his own house. The way shall be prepared for you when you can see his son first, who is in London. When will you come?
Directly?
First, you should have some new clothes to come in, and they should not be working clothes. Shall we say, this day week? Now, you'll want some money. Shall I leave you 20 guineas? Well, Joseph Gargery, you look dumbfounded.
I am.
It was understood you wanted nothing for yourself, remember?
And it will ever be.
But, if it was in my instructions to make you a present as compensation for the loss of the boy...
Pip is that hearty welcome to go free with his services to honor and fortune as no words can tell him. But if you think as money can make compensation to me for the loss of the little child who would come to the forge, and ever the best of friends...
Oh, sure. We'll ever be the best of friends.
Now, Joseph Gargery, I warn you, this is your last chance.
Which I mean to say that if you come into my place bull-baiting and badgering me, come on. If you're a man, come on. Which I mean to say, that what I say, I mean to say, and stand or fall by.
Well, Mr. Pip, I think the sooner you leave here, as you're to be a gentleman, the better. Let it stand for this day week, and you shall receive my printed address in the meantime. Understand that I express no opinion one way or the other on the trust I undertake. I'm paid for doing so, and I do it. Understand that.
Joe, have you told Biddy?
No, Pip. Which I left to yourself, Pip.
I would rather you told Joe.
Pip's a gentleman of fortune, then. God bless him in it.
Fortune? Oh! Oh, Pip! Oh, congratulations!
God bless you in it.
Oh, Pip, but how? I mean, oh, Pip!
My expectations come from a mysterious person, Biddy. Nobody must know.
Well, I'll be very particular. I've no fear.
Aye, and I'll be equally particular, Pip.
Oh, Pip, it's what you wanted.
Infinite pains were then taken by Biddy to convey to my sister some idea of what had happened. She laughed and nodded her head a great many times, and even repeated after Biddy the words Pip and property. But to the best of my belief, these efforts entirely failed.
5 more days, and then the day before the day.
They'll soon go.
Yes.
I've been thinking, Joe, that when I go down on Monday and order my new clothes, I'll have them sent to Mr. Pumblechook's. It would be very disagreeable to be stared at by all the people here.
Have you thought about when you'll show yourself to Mr. Gargery and your sister and me? You will show yourself to us, won't you?
Biddy, I shall bring my clothes here in a bundle one evening, most likely the evening before I go away. I promise.
Up in my little room, I opened the window and stood looking out. Then I saw Joe come slowly out of the dairy door beneath me. then Biddy. And she brought him a pipe and lit it for him. He never smoked so late. And it seemed to me that he wanted comforting for some reason or other. And so did I. I drew back and sat in my one chair by the bedside, feeling it very sorrowful and strange that this first night of my bright fortunes should be the loneliest I had ever known. Next day, after Joe had brought out my indentures from the press in the best parlour and we'd put them on the fire, I strolled out alone to finish off the marshes at once and get them done with. If I had often thought before, with something approaching shame, of my companionship with the fugitive whom I had once seen limping among those graves, what were my feelings now, when the place recalled him, ragged and shivering, with his felon iron and badge? My comfort was that it had happened a long time ago, and that he had doubtless been transported a long way off, and that he was dead to me, and might be really dead into the bargain. And I, destined for Estella? I shall never forget you, but I have a favour to ask.
Yes?
That you will not omit any chance of helping Joe on a little.
How?
In his learning and his manners.
Oh, won't his manners do, then?
My dear Biddy, they do very well here.
Oh, they do very well here.
Listen, but if I were to remove Joe into a higher sphere, as I shall hope to when I fully come into my property, it would hardly do him justice.
And don't you think he knows that?
What do you mean? Biddy, having rubbed a leaf to pieces between her hands, so that the smell of a blackcurrant bush has ever since recalled to me that evening in the little garden by the side of the lane, looked fully at me.
Have you never considered that he may be proud?
Proud?
Maybe he's too proud to let anyone take him out of a place that he's competent to fill, and fills well, and with respect. To tell you the truth, I think he is. Though it seems bold in me to say so, for you must know him far better than I do.
You're envious and grudging, Biddy. You're jealous on account of my rising fortune, and you can't help showing it.
If you have the heart to think so, say so.
If you have the heart to be so, you mean? I'm extremely sorry to see this in you, Biddy. It's a bad side of human nature.
Whether you scold me or approve of me, you may equally depend upon my trying to do all that lies in my power here at all times. And whatever opinion you may take away of me shall make no difference in my remembrance of you. Yet, a gentleman should not be unjust, neither.
Biddy went into the house, and I took a dejected stroll until supper time, again feeling it very sorrowful and strange that this, the second night of my bright future, should be as lonely and unsatisfactory as the first. On the Friday, I went to Mr. Pumblechook's to put on my new clothes and prepare my visit to Miss Havisham's. The clothes were rather a disappointment, of course. But after I'd had my new suit on some half an hour, and had gone through the immensity of posturing with Mr. Pumblechook's very limited dressing glass in the futile endeavour to see my legs, it seemed to fit me better.
Come in. Don't go, Sarah Pocket. Well, Pip.
I start for London, Miss Havisham, tomorrow, and I thought you would kindly not mind my taking leave of you.
This is a gay figure, Pip.
She made her crutch stick play around me as if she, the fairy godmother who had changed me, were bestowing the finishing gift. I've come into such good fortune since I saw you last, Miss Havisham, and I am so grateful for it.
Aye, I've heard all about it, Pip. So you go tomorrow?
Yes, Miss Havisham.
And you are adopted by a rich person?
Yes, Miss Havisham.
Not named?
No, Miss Havisham.
And Mr. Jaggers is made your guardian?
Yes, Miss Havisham. She quite gloated on these questions and answers, so keen was she to see Sarah Pocket's jealous dismay.
Well, you have a promising career before you. Be good. deserve it.
I will, Miss Havisham.
And abide by Mr. Jagger's instructions.
I will.
Goodbye, Pip. You will always keep the name of Pip, you know.
Yes, Miss Havisham.
She stretched out her hand, and I went down on my knee and put it to my lips. She looked at Sarah Pocket with triumph in her weird eyes. And so I left my fairy godmother, with both her hands on her crutchstick, standing in the midst of the dimly lighted room beside the rotten bride cake shrouded in cobwebs. On my last evening, I again dressed myself out in my new clothes for the delight of Joe and Biddy.
That's tremendous, Pip, old chap.
Oh, Pip!
And sat in my splendour until bedtime. We had a hot supper on the occasion, graced by the inevitable roast fowl. But we were all very low, and none the higher for pretending to be in spirits. Breakfast next morning had no taste in it, and was hurried.
Well, I suppose I must be off.
I had told Joe that I wished to walk away all alone. I'm sore afraid that this intention originated in my sense of the contrast there would be between me and Joe if we went to the coach together. Now I had an impulse to change my mind and entreat Joe to walk with me. But I did not. I kissed my sister, who was laughing and nodding and shaking in her usual chair, and kissed Biddy, and threw my arms around Joe's neck.
Oh, chap.
Then I took up my little portmanteau and walked out. The last I saw of them was when I suddenly heard a scuffle behind me, and looking back, saw Joe throwing an old shoe after me, and Biddy throwing another. I stopped then to wave my hat, and dear old Joe waved his strong right arm above his head.
Hooray!
And Biddy put her apron to her face. I walked away at a good pace, whistling and making nothing of going. But the village was very peaceful and quiet, and the light mists were solemnly rising, as if to show me the world. And I had been so innocent and little there, and all beyond was so unknown and great, that in a moment, with a strong heave and sob, I broke into tears. Heaven knows we need never be ashamed of our tears, for they are rain upon the blinding dust of earth, overlying our hard hearts. I was better after I had cried than before, more sorry, more aware of my own ingratitude, more gentle. If I had cried before, I should have had Joe with me then. We Britons thought at that time we had the best and were the best of everything. Otherwise, while I was scared by the immensity of London, I think at first sight I might have had some faint doubts whether it was not rather ugly, crooked, narrow, and dirty. My new guardian, Mr. Jaggers, had duly sent me his address, Little Britain, just out of Smithfield and close to the coach office. I had scarcely time to enjoy the hackney coach and think how like a straw yard it was, and to wonder why the horse's nosebags were kept inside.
Here's we are, sir. Mr. Jagger's office.
How much?
A shilling. Unless you wish to make it more.
I think not.
Then it must be a shilling. I don't want to get into trouble with Mr. Jaggers. I know him. Thank you, sir.
I went into the front office, my little portmanteau in my hand. Mr. Jaggers being in court, I was directed to wait in his room. It was lighted by a skylight only, and was a most dismal place. There were not so many papers about, but there were some odd objects. A rusty old pistol, a sword in a scabbard, and two dreadful casts on a shelf, of faces peculiarly swollen and twitchy about the nose. Mr. Jagger's own high-backed chair was of deadly black horsehair with rows of brass nails round it like a coffin. The room, being small, the clients would seem to have had the habit of backing up against the wall opposite, it being greasy with shoulders. I sat wondering and waiting in the close place until I could no longer bear the two faces above Mr. Jagger's chair and got up and went out to take a turn in the air. Thus I discovered Smithfield, a shameful place all asmear with filth and fat and foam and blood, and the black dome of St. Paul's and Newgate Prison. Following the wall of the jail, I found the roadway covered with straw to deaden the noise of passing vehicles, and from this and the quantity of people standing about, smelling strongly of spirits and beer, I inferred that the trials were on.
Step inside, sir. Hear a trial or so. I can arrange, sir, a front place for half a crown.
No, thank you.
Full view of the Lord Chief Justice in his wig and robe, sir.
I have to be elsewhere.
All right, sir, 18 pence will show you where the gallows are kept. The whipping yard, the debtor's door, 18 pence, sir. And the portal from whence today, 4 of them will come out to be killed in a row.
No, thank you.
At length, I refound Little Britain, where I became aware I was not the only one waiting for Jaggers.
Jaggers will do it if it's to be done.
Jaggers is for him, Amelia. What more could you have?
Here it comes.
Mr. Piff.
Mr. Jaggers.
Excuse me a moment.
Mr. Jaggers.
I have nothing to say to you. I want to know no more than I know. As for the result, it's a toss-up. Have you paid Wemmick?
We made the money up this morning, sir.
Has Wemmick got it?
Oh, yes, sir.
Then you may go. Now, you... Amelia, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Jaggers.
And do you remember that but for me, you wouldn't be here and couldn't be here?
Oh, yes, sir. Lord bless you, sir. Well, we know that.
Then why do you come here?
My bills, sir.
Now, I'll tell you what, once and for all, if you don't know that your bill is in good hands, I know it. And if you come here bothering me about your bill again, I shall make an example of both your bill and you and let him slip through my fingers.
Oh, no, sir.
Have you paid Wemmick?
Oh, yes, sir. Every farthing.
Then you've done all you have got to do.
But, sir,
say another word, one single word, and Wemmick shall give you your money back.
Oh, no, sir.
Now, out of our way!
While he lunched, standing from a sandwich box and a pocket flask of sherry, he seemed to bully his very sandwich as he ate it. I was informed what arrangements he had made for me.
Now, you will go to Barnard's Inn.
Barnard's Inn?
As I say, one of the ancient inns of Chancery, now having no legal character whatsoever. To the rooms of young Mr. Pocket. A bed has been sent in for your accommodation. You will remain with young Pocket until Monday. On Monday, you will go with him to visit his father, Mr. Matthew Pocket, by whatever means convenient to you, and try how you like him.
Yes.
Your allowance is a very liberal one. There are the cards of certain traders whom you'll deal with for all kinds of clothes and such other items you can reasonably want.
Thank you.
Not here to be thanked. What I do because I'm paid to do it, no more. You will find your credit good, Mr. Pip, but I shall, by this means, be able to check your bills and pull you up if I find you outrunning the constable. Of course, you'll go wrong somehow, but that's no fault of mine. Wemmick will walk you round to your rooms. Good day!
Oh, Mr. Wemmick.
I tell you, it's no use. He won't have a word to say to one of you.
Mr. Wemmick, please!
I found Mr. Wemmick to be a dry man, short, with a square wooden face. Several rings and seals hung from his watch chain. He wore 4 mourning rings, and he had keen, black, glittering 50-year-old eyes.
So, you were never in London before?
No.
I was new here once. Rum to think of it now. But now I know the moves of it.
Is it a very wicked place?
You may get cheated, robbed, and murdered in London. But there are plenty of people anywhere who'll do that for you.
If there is bad blood between you and them.
Oh, I don't know. They'll do it if there's anything to be got by it.
He had a post-box mouth that gave a mechanical appearance of smiling. We had got to the top of Holborn Hill before I knew it was merely a mechanical appearance and that he was not smiling at all.
Do you know where Mr. Matthew Pocket lives?
Hammersmith, west of London.
Is that far?
Well, say 5 miles.
Do you know him?
Why, you're a regular cross-examiner. Yes, I know him. I know him. Ah, here we are. Barnard's Inn.
To let glared at me from empty rooms around the square that looked to me like a flat burying ground, scavenged by dismal cats, dismal sparrows, and all shrouded in a frowsy pall of soot and smoke.
Ah, the retirement reminds you of the country? So it does me. Return shortly. Mr. Pocket Jr. hardly thought you'd come so soon. You don't want me anymore?
No, thank you.
As I keep the cash, we shall most likely meet pretty often. Good day.
Good day.
Eh? Oh, to be sure. You're in the habit of shaking hands?
Is it not the London fashion?
I've got so out of it. Very glad, I'm sure, to make your acquaintance, yes. Good day.
Mr. Pocket Jr.'s idea of shortly was not mine, for I had nearly maddened myself looking out of the window's encrusted dirt for nearly half an hour before...
Mr. Pip?
Mr. Pocket?
I'm extremely sorry, but the fact is I've been out on your account. Not that it's any excuse. For I thought, coming from the country, you might like a little fruit after dinner. So I went to Covent Garden Market to get it fresh. Dear me, this door.
Let me! As he was fast making jam of the fruit while wrestling with the door.
Please, take the baskets!
Please, come in. I'm rather bare here, but Father thought you'd get more agreeably through tomorrow with me than him.
No, I'm sure.
I'm sure I'll be very happy to show London to you. Now, the table. You won't find that bad, I hope. It'll be supplied from the coffee house here, and it's only right, I should add, at your expense, such being Mr. Jagger's instructions.
I
know it's not splendid, because I've my own bread to earn, and my father hasn't anything to give me, and I shouldn't be willing to take it even if he had. This is your bedroom. If you want anything, I'll go and get it. The chambers are retired and we shall be close together, but we shan't fight, I dare say. Oh, you're holding the fruit still. Let me take... Oh. You're the prowling boy from Miss Havisham's.
And you're the pale young gentleman.
You! Well, it's all over now, I hope.
Yes!
And it will be generous of you if you'll forgive me for having knocked you about so.
Of course.
You hadn't come into your good fortune at that time?
No.
No. I was rather on the lookout for good fortune then. Miss Havisham had sent for me, trial visit. And if I'd come out of it successfully, I suppose I would have been provided for. I'd have been what you call it to a Stella.
What's that?
Affianced, betrothed, engaged, what's its name, any word of that sort.
How did you bear your disappointment?
Oh, she's a tartar.
Miss Havisham?
A Stella. She's hard and haughty and... been brought up by Miss Havisham to wreak revenge on all the male sex.
What relation is she?
None. Only adopted. Sit down, I beg you. Sit down.
Why should she wreak revenge on all the male sex? What revenge?
Lord, Mr. Pip, don't you know?
No.
Then we'll keep it till dinner. Through him being Miss Havisham's man of business, Mr. Jaggers was good enough to suggest my father for your tutor. My father is Miss Havisham's cousin. But he's a bad courtier and won't flatter her.
I had never seen anyone then, nor anyone since, who more strongly expressed to me, in every look and tone, a natural incapacity to do anything secret or mean than Herbert Pocket.
There, dinner. What do you think?
Perfect. I would take it as a great kindness, Mr. Pocket, if you would give me a hint whenever you see me at a loss or going wrong.
With pleasure. But in return, you must do me the favour of calling me by my Christian name, Herbert.
With pleasure. And I'm Philip.
I don't hate to Philip. It sounds like a moral boy in a book, so determined to go a bird's nesting that he got himself eaten by bears who lived handily in the neighbourhood. I tell you what I should like. We are so harmonious, and you have been a blacksmith. Would you mind Handel for a familiar name?
I don't understand.
There's a charming piece of music by Handel called The Harmonious Blacksmith.
I should like it very much.
Then eat, my dear Handel. Eat.
You promised to tell me about Miss Havisham.
Just allow me to mention, Handel, that in London it is not the custom to put the knife in the mouth for fear of accidents. And while the fork is reserved for that use, it is not put further in than necessary. It's scarcely worth mentioning, only it's as well to do as other folk do. Also, the spoon is not generally used overhand, but under. This has two advantages. You get at your mouth better, which, after all, is the object, and you save a good deal of the attitude of opening oysters on the part of the right elbow. Miss Havisham. Her mother died early, and she's the spoilt child of a rich, rich brewer who denied her nothing. He was very proud, and so is she.
She was the only child?
No, her father privately married again. His cook, I rather think. Mm. She died, and their son became part of the family, but riotous, dear Handel, extravagant, undutiful, bad. The father, though, on his death, left him well off, but not so well off as Miss Havisham. Excuse my mentioning that society as a body does not expect one to be so strictly conscientious in emptying one's glass as to turn it bottom upwards with the rim on one's nose.
Thank you.
Not at all. The half-brother soon ran up awful debts, and he seemed to bear a deep moral grudge against his sister. And now I come to the cruel part of the story. Merely breaking off my dear Handel to remark that a dinner napkin will not go into a tumbler.
Thank you.
Not at all, I'm sure.